Thanks so much for joining us for this Views and Brews remix on Dueling Organs, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas. This very special show features some of the best Hammond B3 players talking about the history and significance of the instrument and playing some great tunes. Stay with us as we enjoy this Views and Brews remix with Brannon Temple on drums and organists Red Young, Raphael Wesnig, Dane Farnsworth, Ian McLagan, and Dr. James Polk. I'm your host, Rebecca McEnroy. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, folks.
Oh.
Yeah, it was. She says it's a lucky thing. I had until April to think about the show, and then last week, all of a sudden, it's now. So, but you know, that's the way we do shows. You know.
So, Red, tell us a little bit about the significance and the history of the organ. You're quite an encyclopedia on
organs. Well, yeah. I mean, I've played the Hammond organ for a little over 40 years now. But, I mean, of course, organ started back in Roman times. You know, they had invented some kind of keys that would, and they'd blow air through pipes, you know, and they invented this thing that, you know, the only way that you could play an organ would be a big cathedral, you know, or something like that, because eventually the pipes became 32 feet long, so you had to have a big room. And, you know, they down through the age of Bach, you know, I mean, the organ's been around for a couple of thousand years, I guess. But, I mean, there was just no power like it. You could do what a whole orchestra would do on an organ, which, you know, like. You know, I mean, that sound is just like, you know. But what happened was that there was a man named Lauren Hammond, and he was an inventor back in the 1900s. He actually started, well, he by the time he died in 1973, he had 100 patents to his name. One of them was a bridge table that would automatically dial your cards. You just turned the... That was not a real popular one, but he also invented an electric clock and started a clock company, Hammond Clock Company, back in 1928, something like that. And he invented this motor. It was a synchronous electric motor, so it would run on 60 cycles a second current. And by 1932, there was a lot of other clocks, electric clocks. So what he was trying to do was save his clock company. Now, Lauren Hammond wasn't a musician. In fact, he was tone deaf. But a friend of his said, well, you know, why don't you invent an organ, you know? Because the only way you can play an organ is if you have a room that's 32 feet tall. Not many people had that. So he said, yeah, he got to work on it. And he invented... with a synchronous motor, you could he figured, you know, you could just run it on house current and it would continue to roll. He also noticed that, well, through his experiments with electricity, if you notched the wheels, it was a big development. I don't know all the theory behind it, but in the Hammond organ, there's 96 notched wheels. Some of them have two notches on them, some four, some eight, 16, and on like that. 32, 64, 128. Okay. How'd I do? Is that all right? but they all spin at the same time. And as you walked in, you saw that thing that was sitting on the table out there. That was actually the tone wheel generator that spins. And there's a pickup on each one of those notched wheels, and it simulates a tone. So what he what he invented was actually an organ, you know. And it,
and so this was like in about 1939 it started.
No, it was 1932 is when he started developing it. He put out the first Hammond organ in 19, I think it was 35.
And who first started playing these organs? Where could you hear them?
Well, there's well, when he first started trying to sell it, he was, you know, just home, you know. Well, I don't know exactly how it got to the public, but I know George Gershwin was one of the first people to buy it. So was Henry Ford. But what he was trying to do was, you know, trying to simulate the organ. The Organ Guild of America disputed him calling his invention an organ. So they actually had a, well, it was a, not a contest, but a demonstration. They had three judges, I believe it was in New York, in a cathedral in New York, and they had a regular organ with pipes and the Hammond organ set up beside it, and they had the judges blindfolded, and they you know, asked them which one was the real organ, and two out of three judges picked the Hammond organ as being the actual pipe organ. So okay, it's an organ, you know. So that was you know, basically the invention of it.
Mm-hmm. And in the 30s and 40s, then who really started playing it? It was in the white churches first, is that what you said?
Well, no, it was well, I don't know exactly the advertising campaign, how he got into it. I know Fats Waller, who was a theater organist at the time, he played for a lot of movies and stuff. So he actually put out a 78 record sometime in the 30s of one of his songs. And that caught on, you know.
Could you play us a little jingle for me?
Would I? Hey. Yeah, it was just, I mean, back then, the organ didn't have the speaker cabinet that I have. We'll get into that in a minute, but it was like this real... I see. You know, he's playing like that. Or they would do things like that. You know, they'd sell it to baseball stadiums or the soap operas, you know. That's where they primarily saw it, you know. Because the radio was new, so they would have it on the air and they would do stuff like that.
Beautiful.
You know? So it's beautiful, yeah.
It's beautiful. So before we get into before we get into our first tune, why don't you tell us a little bit about Count Basie, how he played it?
Well, we're kind of jumping a little bit there, because what happened back in the 1930s, you know, there was all these big bands, and as the bands started becoming too big to take on the road, a lot of the musicians would change over to the Hammond organ to take the place of the band, you know. So Count Basie actually played some things. He got rid of the horn section. He had three horns and bass, drums, guitar, Freddie Green on guitar. And he'd go out on the road with an eight-piece band. It would sound like a 17-piece band, but didn't cost as much as a 17-piece band, you know, or eat as much as a 17-piece band. So that was good.
So tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear first.
And what?
What we're going to hear first.
Well, I mean, we're going to be covering a lot of area here, and you'll see. I mean, one of the ways the Hammond organ works is the tonal qualities of it. You know, it's like... Oh, here. Is that? No, there it is. You have a fundamental tone, octave below, octave above, octave above. That's all on one note. Then you have the harmonics, a fifth. I'm holding down the same note. fifth above that, and then a third. So just in those drawbars, you can change the sound. Now what? You can't do that with any other instrument because it mixes the sound. But of course, when Hammond organ came out, they had, this is the pattern that you use for flutes, and this is what you have for such and such. And it, you know, it was like really cut and dried. So that's the way a lot of people played it. And they didn't know anything other than just advertising in papers and stuff. How it got popular, there was a gal named Ethel Smith back in the 40s. I don't know if any of y'all know her, but she actually was in a couple of movies, and she came out with this. Probably need to get Brannon up here for this one. Mr. Temple? Yeah. Mr. Brannon Temple. Cool heart. Okay.
Take me a while to get up.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Ethel Smith was this really nice-looking lady that always wore nice dresses, and she would get in movies with various people. What? I think the Andrews sisters did stuff with her. Thank you. Well, what that did in the movie, see, that brought it to American households. And American households said, oh, what is this instrument? It's smaller than a piano. It makes a lot of sounds. And so they got it into, you know, various places. Churches bought it because it was a lot cheaper than building a 32-foot pipe organ, which would cost, you know, $70,000-$80,000, and this thing cost $2,500.
So I'd like to get pretty quickly to its relationship with the Leslie speaker. But first of all, when did you first hear the Hammond? What's your personal experience with this?
I first heard a Hammond in late 1960s. I heard it on record. Probably Ian McLaughlin was on there as well, but with the Animals back in the 1960s. You know, heard this, you know, House of Rising Sun, but that's jumping a little bit. But the speaker, was invented to go along with it. It was a guy named Don Leslie, and he invented this rotating speaker. I don't know if you can see it back here, but there's a rotor in the top that has a hole in it, and when it spins around like this, it, you know, wow, wow, going past your ear, and there's a scoop in the bottom of it that also does the same thing. Now, when Leslie designed it, he thought it was perfect for the Hammond organ. He designed it in 1937. He started manufacturing them in 1940. Since Lauren Hammond didn't invent it, he hated it. So he would always put, he never did want to have a Leslie speaker hooked up to his Hammond organ, so he would always put in some kind of device on his Hammonds that you couldn't hook up a Leslie speaker, and it would take Don Leslie about 2 weeks to figure out how to hook it up.
And you couldn't even buy a Leslie speaker in the same store as a Hammond until he died.
No, until he died in 1973. the Leslie Speaker store was always next door to the Hammond store, but it was not inside it.
So this is an instrument that can take you literally in one song from the church to the nightclub. Let's talk, let's invite someone else up really
yes,
quickly.
Yes, let's invite someone else up.
And have him talk about things. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. James Polk.
Get situated here. I can understand now how my father used to tell me that you can't get old being a wimp. Well, I got interested in the organ, I guess about the same time that Red did. It was back in the early 60s. And I had just finished college here in Austin, Texas, Houston Tillerson College. And there was a group of guys that were stationed in the Army at Fort Hood. And they used to come down and play because all over Austin during those days there were several little clubs that would have jazz music in it, you know. And so there was a little club up on the corner of Chican and 12th Street called the Flamingo Club, and where they housed the proprietor there, whose name was Willie Jones. His nickname was Dad, because and he loved jazz, so he would allow, even as a student at Houston Tillerson, he would allow us college night where all the young college musicians, aspiring musicians, would come there on Wednesday nights and play. Well, then, he had nothing in his club but jazz. He wouldn't allow anything else in there, nothing but jazz. And this guy from East Texas, from Port Arthur, I think, or Beaumont, by the name of Andy Anderson, would come every summer. He was a school teacher, so he would have the summer off, but he would spend the summer in Austin, Texas, and he would bring his Hammond organ, and he played at that club all summer. And I listened to that. I would go up there and listen to that, and I was just mesmerized by the machine. Of course, Red has done more extensive research on the organ than I have. I was busy researching other things. But I immediately fell in love with that sound, you know, with the organ sound. And then these guys I was telling you about from Fort Hood, one of them happened to be an organ player. His name was Tom Hurley, and he played at that same little club. Dad would let them come in with a trio and play there. So I became friends with Tom Hurley, and I would go sit and watch him play, and I'd say, well, man, how do you do that, you know? So I became interested in the machine at that particular time. Didn't know anything about the history of it. I knew during that time Jimmy Smith was very popular, and of course we all probably have all heard about Jimmy Smith. But Jimmy started playing in the 50s. Well, I mean, the organ had been out. It was invented in 35, I think it was introduced. And the first guy to introduce it to, well, I won't say who's the first, because, you know, you can't ever say who's on first, you know. But Fats Waller was one of the first organ players to play jazz on the organ. And he was also responsible for playing the organ in church, the Hammond organ in church, because I think his dad was a minister, if I'm not mistaken. His dad was a minister. So was Jimmy Smith. His father was a minister. So one thing, the evolution kind of started from there, and Fats Waller was one of the first to introduce jazz organ. And the next one who really took it to heights before Jimmy did was William Strathern Davis, better known to us as Wild Bill Davis. You know, he was one of the first jazz organists that used the group or used the jazz trio and do that. So then, of course, Jimmy Smith took it from that point on. And I happen to have known Jimmy Smith. We became very, very close friends over the years. And I learned a lot from him as far as the machine is concerned. I didn't do, like I said, I didn't do a lot of extensive research on it, but that's kind of the evolution. That's how it kind of introduced, you know, from Fats Waller, from who studied it and played it in church because of his family background in the church. And he also played other things. You know, he played jazz music too. Wild Bill Davis in the 40s and the early 50s, and then Jimmy Smith picked it up in the 50s, and it's all history, you know, from that point on. One of the most popular ones now, I guess, is probably Joey DeFrancesco. Yeah, and I have a story to tell you about him, too.
Well, as some of the greatest jazz musicians we have in Austin, tell us a little bit about what you're going to play for us tonight to demonstrate your genre.
I don't know.
Okay. Perfect. Well, I'm going to get off and I'm going to let you guys play.
I don't have the focus idea. that was quick. We decided to play this next tune. Turn the mic off. A Jimmy Smith number that's entitled Back at the Chicken Shack.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You ready? Oops, oops.
Hey, I'll take my glass off
too. Let me get it on. Let me make sure I got everything. Oops, I don't want that one. Okay. That's better.
Okay.
Yeah. One, two.
Thank you.
and Dr. James Polk. Well, we're going to have everybody up on stage at the very end, but before we let you go, Dr. Polk, tell us a little bit about playing with Jimmy Smith. What did he bring to the organ?
I don't know if you want me to talk about Jimmy over the mic. But... Jimmy was truly a character. None like I have ever seen before, or none like I've ever seen since. But he had a big heart, he was a good person, and he was very sincere about his music. I found out that I used to work with a guy by the name of Phil Upchurch, a guitar player in Los Angeles, and Jimmy would come by the club all the time where we played, and I was playing the Fender Rhodes, and Jimmy wanted to sit in and play Fender Rhodes, and I told him, I said, Jimmy, you can play organ, but you can't play this Fender Rhodes, man. Sounded horrible, but anyway, when I left Austin in the latter part of the 79 or 78, or sometimes back in that, it all gets fuzzy now, you know, I moved to California, and the day after I got there, the next morning, as a matter of fact, I was at the post office, and I was coming out to get in my car, and I heard somebody holler, James Polk! I said, who in the world is this that knows me? I just got here. So it happened to have been Albert Collins, the blues guitar player, who had lived across the street from the post office. So he told me he had been talking to some people, and he introduced me to a guy by the name of Art Hillary. You know, Art, yeah. Art was a very fine pianist, very fine organ player. And Jimmy Smith at the time had a supper club out in North Hollywood, I guess it was. Yeah, on Victory. So Art said he was playing the jam sessions on, they had jam sessions twice a week on Monday nights and Wednesday nights. So Art asked me, say, man, I don't want to play every Monday and every Wednesday. He said, why don't we switch up? Say, I'll play some Mondays and you play Wednesdays, and then you play some Mondays, and I play Wednesdays. I said, hell, that's fine, man. So I went out to the club. Well, the reason I did that is because I went out to the club, and I sat in and played, and of course they heard me, so they said, well, yeah, okay, you cool. So that's how I got a chance to meet Jimmy Smith, and because he was in the club the night I went there and played. So I started playing the jam sessions. And one night... Jimmy would close the doors. The clubs closed at 2 o'clock, but Jimmy would lock the doors, and everybody came to his club. I mean, Freddie Hubbard, Eddie Harris. I mean, the list just went on and on and on of people that I had read about and listened to for a number of years. Well, they would come by the club, and Jimmy would lock the doors, and sometimes we wouldn't get out of there until 5 or 6 o'clock the next morning. You know, we'd be there just jamming all night. One particular night, Jimmy's wife, whose name was Lola, was a very fine vocalist, had a very beautiful voice. So one night, the club was closed, it was after 2 o'clock, the doors were locked, so Lola said, well, I want to sing one. I said, okay. So I said, what do you want to sing? She said, Stella by Starlight. I said, okay, cool. So there, you know, I started playing Stella by Starlight, and Jimmy, of course, was in the back in his office with he and Freddie Hubbard and some other people. So I started playing Stella by Starlight, and before I could get even halfway through the tune, Jimmy came out and looked around to see who was playing. And he saw it was me, and he jumped up on the stage and slid me off the organ stool and told me, said, move back, I got it. I said, okay, Jimmy, it's your organ, your club. Your wife, yeah. So I let him have it. So he played, and every time Jimmy had this way of, he'd play some card that you never heard of, and then he'd look at you like, you know, I got you, didn't I? So when we finished the song, his wife, Lola, told him, she said, Jimmy, darling, he's your Lola. She said, from now on, if I'm singing Stella by Starlight or whatever I'm singing, you let Pope play. from that day until the day he passed, every time I'd see him, he would cuss me out. That is a true story. But he was a dear friend, I mean. Other than that.
Well, Dr. Polk is going to be here all night, so he will answer some questions in just a little bit. But moving on from jazz, we're going to move across the pond and ask someone to come up on stage who you all know very, very well. Ian McLagan. Obviously grew up in England. Tell us about when you first heard the organ over there.
I first knowingly heard the organ, I think it was 63, and it was Green Onions. And I didn't know what it was, but I wanted to play. I wanted to hear it again. And then when I found out it was Booker T and the MGs, I had to have that album. And I was in a band, but I was playing bad rhythm guitar and bad rhythm piano. And I thought, maybe I could play bad organ, too. But the thing was, I was lucky that there was an ad in the back of the Melody Maker, which was the music magazine, and it was an advertisement that said, have a Hammond organ in your own home for 2 weeks, free approval. Free was the word. Hammond organ and free. You never heard of that before, right? And my mum and dad both worked. And I don't know what I was doing. I think I was at art school. I was at art school. And so I wasn't really doing anything. I had plenty of time. And so I phoned, and they said, yes, I took my address. They delivered it the next day while my parents were at work. And I mean, I couldn't believe it. Well, we lived in a little house, sitting room, dining room, kitchen, and that was all we had, you know. And they brought it in, they put it in the dining room, but they had to move the dining room table back into the corner. And so now it was a Hammond room, pretty much. You know? And my dad came, he was first home. I went running up to the door and I said, Dad, I've got a Hammond organ. He said, what's that? I said, it's free. I said, it's in the dining room. And he opened the door, he could only open it a little bit. And he said, well, it's big. He said, well, let me tell Mum about this. God bless him, you know. And 2 weeks later, they took it. You know, we had our dinner in the sitting room for 2 weeks. And eventually they took it out. And a couple of weeks later, they brought my first Hammond organ. My dad signed papers for me. I was bought it on what they call the Never Never in England. You know, you never seem to own it. You just pay a little bit every week.
What did you start playing when you first had it?
Well, I had the Green Onions album, which, you see, another thing, we used spring onions for cooking in England, and it never occurred to me. It was like 20 years later, I looked at the cover and said, oh, green onions are spring onions. I never even thought about the cover. There was a picture of green onions. Anyway, I learned how to fiddle around with the drawbars because... Can you hold that a second? The difference, you know, you have this note. You can change it while you're playing. It's such a beautiful instrument. I fell in love with Booker T and the MGs and this instrument. We should play a little bit, maybe.
Thank you.
some pretty interesting conversations in integrating this into various bands that you played with. You played with the Stones, I mean, Rod Stewart. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, the funny thing is, I'd been a big Booker T fan, obviously. And then when I heard Blonde on Blonde, I think it was Blonde on Blonde, Dylan's album, I heard a different sound on the organ, and that was Al Cooper. And I've never thanked him enough. I tell Booker T every time I see him, I thank him, you know. We actually have been sharing B3s in England the last year or so when I've been touring with the Faces. We've been switching backwards and forwards, and it's really nice to see the registrations that he's left, you know. I check it all out. But Al Cooper had a sound, and it turned out on that session, he wasn't supposed to be playing. He's a guitarist, and he sat in and played beautiful, soulful organ. And the sounds that he made on that album, I used my version for Maggie May and other tracks, because Rod didn't, you know, it fit better than the Booker T sound, you know. But it's endless. I mean, Billy Preston is my big idol, you know, as well. It's endless, apart from Red and Dr. James.
So I'd like to open it up for questions, but could we hear just maybe one more tune? You guys play something, one more quick thing together? Yeah? To start off our closing jam, I'd like to introduce a couple guys who are a little younger, new generation of Hammond players. One, all the way from Austria, we're very excited to have him here this evening, Raphael Wesnig. Welcome. Okay, you ready for this? And from right here in Austin, with his own Hammond that he brought with him, Dane Farnsworth, welcome. So you guys are going to start us off this evening. I have no idea what to expect, but why don't you talk a little bit about what you're going to start us off with, and I'm going to get off.
Well, we thought about The Cat, you know, also organ classic. Jimmy Smith played it, so is that cool with you guys?
All right. Thank you. Ephraim.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a Views and Brews remix on Dueling Organs, recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas, with Brandon Temple on drums and organists Red Young, Raphael Wesnig, Dane Farnsworth, Ian McLagan, and Dr. James Polk. Also along for the ride, trumpeter Ephraim Owens. Our recording engineer was Casey Cheek. Our videographer was Philippa Rodriguez. Special thanks to Making Views and Brews Possible goes to Matt Munoz and Amy Chambliss of the Cactus Cafe and Hawk Mendenhall of KUT. Views and Brews is recorded live at the Cactus Cafe in Austin, Texas, and we'd love to have you come out to a show. Find us on Facebook and get archives and information on upcoming shows at the Views and Brews page at KUT.org. For KUT Radio, I'm Rebecca McEnroy. Thanks for listening.